When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Supernatural Circumstances, the podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole into the fantastic world of the strange, the paranormal, and the unknown. I'm Morgan Knutson.
And I'm Mike Brown. It's time to dim the lights and settle in. Come along with us on this week's adventure. Ooh.
And we've got a good one.
We've got a good one. Talking to our favorite pianist.
Yes.
Eric Mintel. Eric's an amazing musician. He really, really is.
He is.
It's fantastic that not only is he a great musician, he's also an interesting dude to talk about things paranormal with.
He's been feet on the ground with a very famous historical case, the Beast of Bray Road, which is probably one of the most well-known dogman cases, first investigated by Linda Godfrey. And he's been doing so much digging and research into the history of these things and the sort of the consciousness behind it. What seems to be going on, you know, in the world that relates to this really strange dogman, upright, bipedal, canid phenomenon that people are experiencing, myself included.
I've not had any direct experiences with dogman like you have yourself. However, I'm open to it. I'm interested. Dogman is a really fascinating thing, and it keeps coming up in all kinds of different places, Skinwalker Ranch, Beast of Bray Road, and others. So Eric seems like he's the right guy to talk to about this stuff.
Yeah, and what's neat about Eric is that he's really taken a pretty grounded approach to all of this as well. And it's led him in various different directions. You get into one type of phenomenon, as we know, in this crazy world of parapsychology and the paranormal, and it immediately starts to blend into other areas. And there doesn't seem to be that dividing line anymore. So he's had to be really open-minded and take a hard look at this. And he's fought against a lot of some well-intended skepticism, some not well-intended skepticism, as well as hoaxers.
And also some people who really believe some really weird things as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoaxing going on, in the field of cryptozoology, especially right now. And I think cracking down to the bottom of that is important. So he's covered a lot of this stuff, and I'm really looking forward to delving in with him.
Me too.
This is wonderful, Eric, to have you back. I'm so glad that we can do this today because we're talking about our favorite thing, the Dogman.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so happy to be back with you guys. I mean, you know, it's been a minute, but, you know, both of us have been extremely busy. And so we're back on the topic. We're back in the field. And I'll tell you what, it's just been absolutely crazy.
Oh, that's exciting. I love that. I love hearing about that. The longer that we don't chat, there's so much more that seems to come up and seem to happen, and so now we get together and we get to talk about this, and I want to dive right in because, like you, this is just one of my favorite topics. I hope you brought some stories because we got to get into that.
Big time.
So let's talk a little bit about this. I know that dogmen have been, of course, the topic of discussion across the board now for I'd say like the last few years specifically. And I think a lot of people think that this is something that's super recent, and it's not super recent. This is something that goes right back into Europe and whatnot. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought, too. I thought it was a recent, you know, kind of recent discovery. But then, you know, in our research, finding out that Well, the Beast of Bray Road that we investigated in Elkhorn, Wisconsin, goes all the way back to 1936 and even before then. So, and even in Europe, you know, you've always had like, you know, that werewolf lore, you know, and I always say that there's always a little bit of truth to the folklore. So the fact that you've got these people that are seeing this creature as far back as, you know, many, many years, I mean, like, you know, millennia ago, you know, you have to think to yourself, there's got to be a flesh and blood reason for this. And people are seeing something.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, it does go so far back. And interestingly enough, in so many different cultures,
right,
which has really blown my mind too. Like, a lot of people, you know, outside of Canada, and actually I didn't even know this about certain areas of Canada. There's a subarctic legend featuring dogmen basically between the two Great Lakes of Canada's Northwest Territory, so Great Slave Lake and Great Bear Lake. And there's an entire homeland of a First Nations people called the Dog Rib Nation, and which is part of the Dene. And it's got an entire story and tradition all around the idea of these supernatural dogmen and the Athabascan natives in that area. Like, there's so many areas of this, I think, that are unexplored, and like you say, just go back so far.
I mean, look at the Egyptians. I mean, they had, you know, men there with dog heads, you know, and just in some of that. So you have to really think to yourself, there, what is this phenomena? Was this something that they had actually seen and they wanted to represent it in their artwork? I mean, just, you know, going back to Elkhorn, you know, and our encounter, you know, when I had heard about Dogman, I didn't, you know, to be honest with you, I really didn't put too much to it. I kind of said to myself, well, you know, we're going to get a great documentary. One of our fans and friends, Ellen Collins, you know, paid our freight to get out there and do this great video. And I'm thinking, well, we're going to get a great documentary. We're going to talk to some really cool people. And it would never once entered my mind that we would ever encounter anything out there. And that was it was my stupidity to not even be prepared for what was about to happen the night of October 3rd. And, you know, and I know some of your listeners have probably have seen our video, and I know we've talked about it, but it's called The Beast of Bray Road, Alive and Well. And I would definitely tell them to go check that out, because there is something that we not only heard, but we also saw. We saw the eye shine. Now, I'm not going to say that we saw the physical body. Like, a lot of people out there want to say that they've seen this physical, you know, creature, which some have, but others have said they've seen it and really haven't seen it, you know, and really kind of make up what they're actually seeing. But in our experiences, I know in your experiences, my experiences, we have actually encountered some kind of physical being out there. And what really got me was the fact, even though we heard this howl, to me, that sounded like this low guttural scream, growl, yell combination, which to me sounded like a man screaming in this field.
Yeah, it's unmistakable.
And it never pitched.
Yeah.
You know, we did a presentation a couple of weeks ago, and a guy is sitting there and he's like, oh, that's a coyote. That's a coyote. I said, no, it's not a coyote, man. It's like, if you really, you weren't there. You know, the other thing I have to also tell people is that you could definitely tell a coyote when it pitches. This thing did not pitch. It was just monotone, one long tone. But the other thing is, we're out in the field. We were there. And the fact is, we had these little lavalier microphones on. Now, those are for like close miking when we're doing our videos. Mm-hmm. You know, we can, you know, if there's any wind resistance or anything like that, it'll hear our voices and not the wind. So it was even louder on site to be able to pick that up through these little lavaliers from 100 yards away.
Wow.
And even hearing that, my first thought was, yeah, the fear factor was there a little bit. Like, you know, what the hell is this? But then the other thing was, I was saying, what are we hearing? What is this? And then what really got me was when Scott, our camera guy, shined the light over to the cornfield where we saw where the corn, the row of corn that we had heard the howl coming from. And we see eye shine just darting back and forth about 6 feet up in the corn. And that right there told me, okay, we need to get the heck out of here, because it's telling us that it's their territory. Get out of here. And that's what we did. We hopped on those three wheelers and got out of there. And, but you know, we went, I think I told you, we went back in, this was October 2021. We went back again in April of 2022 to do another follow-up. Now, this time we did not encounter it at all. And I'm kind of glad that we didn't, because people would think, oh, these guys are seeing this thing all the time. And people haven't seen this thing in years, but these guys are seeing it all the time. And I'm glad we didn't, because then people would say we're faking it. But what we did encounter was we did a town hall meeting where we had over 140 people showed up at this town hall to tell their story of seeing the same thing. And they all described the creature the same way. When it's on two legs, it looks like it's gliding. When it's on all fours, it's very, very fast. So with that knowledge in mind, come to find out later that not only have you had those encounters up in Canada with your dog, man, we've had, there's another dog man out here in Bucks County called the Beast of Bryn Athyn. And it's a suburb outside of Philadelphia. Huh. Basically, everyone is describing the same thing that they're seeing out in Elkhorn.
Well, I think you touched on a few things here that we've got to get back to later, including the hoax factor, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Right.
But because that's a whole other thing. But I agree. Like you go into this, and like you, I think the Beast of Bray Road was my historical introduction to this because of the amazing Linda Godfrey. Here she is writing about this incredible experience. And yeah. I think we all kind of grew up thinking about this as a one-off. You know, it's like this weird thing on Bray Road.
Right.
I know, like, when I started looking into this stuff, when I got reports of it here, I absolutely did not expect to encounter anything. I had no idea that we had this stuff going on, you know, in Canada at all. And just because I, like you, it had always been about, you know, the Beast of Bray Road and things like that. And then here you get into things like encounters with things like the Michigan Dogman, you know, from, and he started back in 1887.
Right.
So it's like, it's
the
incredible.
Further back. Yep. Yeah. The further back you go, the stories are even more chilling. And the other thing is, too, that's why I always say there's a little bit of truth to the folklore, because in every kind of culture, you've got, whether it's dogman, whether it's UFOs, whether it's ghosts, whatever, to Bigfoot, there's these stories that have been handed down generation after generation. I mean, I just saw a UFO documentary up in the Yukon that people were seeing this UFO, and thing happened in 1996. And even 10 years prior to that, you had the Japan Airlines flight 1624, I think it was, that was flying over Japan or flying over Canada, over that Alaska area. And they saw a huge UFO. And it was kind of like the same thing that people in 1996 were describing. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there is things that are out there that, you know, the other thing I think, too, is, you know, people... In our research, what I found, and I don't know what you guys think about this, but I think the people that are seeing these creatures, the UFOs, I believe that they're picked to experience these things.
Ooh.
Whether or not maybe their antenna is more attuned, because you know how it is. I mean, you know, and you've been in these situations, like you've told me, where you'll be standing there, you're going to be, you see a dog man, you see a UFO. The person next to you doesn't see it.
Yeah.
And it's like maybe they're at a different angle or whatever, or they're just connected to that somehow. We just did, I will tell you this story. You want stories? I'll tell you what we just had, what happened.
So, go for it.
Oh my God. Well, it's about Bigfoot in the New Jersey Pine Barrens. Now we did a week after we got home from Elkhorn in 2021, we did a follow-up. Well, we did a video of the beast of Bigfoot in the New Jersey Pine Barrens, because there's been a lot of evidence of that in the Wharton State Park in New Jersey Pine Barrens. Eric Spinner, one of the Bigfoot researcher friends of mine, he's got hair samples, tracks. I mean, really incredible evidence. So we had an encounter with something there in 2021 where his wife was answering it back. It was making a whoop and they were whooping back and forth. And it was amazing to hear that, because again, I go into those, like I see these shows where they're whooping and hollering. I'm like, is that what they really sound like? And, you know, it's, I have to laugh at that. But then what we heard, I'll be damned if that's not what we heard the night of this investigation. And so it changed my whole perspective on what's out there. So fast forward to September 2nd of 2023, we did a follow-up to this investigation in 2021. So Dominic was with us. Now, Dominic is a spirit medium. I know I've told you guys about him before. And he, I believe, sometimes is like a magnet for these things because hunting cryptids and things like that. It's completely out of his wheelhouse. But this investigation, what we wanted to do is we wanted to see what the paranormal aspects of Bigfoot would be in the Pine Barrens. Is Bigfoot a ghost? You know, is Bigfoot, because people can't see it. Is it a flesh and blood creature? So we wanted to kind of go in that direction to kind of see what was going on. So what happened, so Art Mack is one of the other researchers with Eric Spinner. Art, unfortunately, is going through some cancer treatments, but to look at him, you wouldn't think anything's wrong with him, but he's taking medications and stuff and he's doing okay. But we were prior to this investigation, we were talking to Art, and Dominic had deduced that somehow, and I don't know if any of your listeners or anybody has experienced this, maybe you've experienced it too. Dominic figured out that somehow the Art is connected to this Sasquatch or Bigfoot, whereas he deduced that Bigfoot is seeing through Art's eyes. Mm-hmm. He's like being able to see, and I'll tell you why this made sense to us later on in the investigation. Because we go back to base camp and we're at the area that we were in 2021, same area. So we're sitting at base camp again, getting in tune with the night, talking to the guys about their protocol about how they go about researching Bigfoot. Well, Art all of a sudden says, you know, guys, I don't know if it's because of the medications that I'm taking, but I'll tell you, my heart is really racing right now. So with that, we hear a branch behind us crack, and we all flipped around, and thank God the camera person flipped around the same way. And you see for a split second, a branch that was just like something was just there. And about 7 feet up, it hit the branch, and I saw two yellow eyes just for a split second, and it disappeared. They just disappeared. And then you could hear it running back into the swamp area, and Eric heard it. Dominic heard it. We all heard it. It was just like, it was, something was there. So that was amazing. And thank God, you know, Art, we had a laugh later. Art's like, oh yeah, thanks a lot for checking on me. Cause we got so distracted by this whole thing. Art could have face planted right into the ground there, but he didn't. He was fine, but he's okay. But I'll tell you, it was just crazy what happened there. And, we didn't see any tracks. We went immediately over there to see if we could see any tracks. There was a lot of leaf coverage, so it was really hard to see. But we didn't smell anything. We didn't have that, you know, there was no kind of, like a lot of people think, you know, Bigfoot. But now I'm thinking to myself, maybe it was Dogman.
Yeah.
Because there have been other Dogman sightings down in that area. Mm. So it's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of things about portals. You know, we had talked about that before, you know, is Lee Hample's property out in Elkhorn? Could that be a portal that's bringing this creature in and out? We had so much happen the night of that investigation. It was just not only that. I mean, we saw a UFO. We had this weird mist came up from the field that we were in. And I don't say this lightly, man. I mean, it sounds completely out there to even talk about that, but that's exactly what happened. And, I always go back to this picture Lee has too. It's just absolutely mind blowing. It's a daylight picture. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a daylight picture of what looks like orbs in this blue sky. These orbs, translucent orbs, but in the orb, it looks like for all intents and purposes, it looks like the Dogman's in there. Like it's just in a, like crossed in a T. Its arms are out, and you can see the body just straight, and it looks like a T. Something within this orb, and there was not one of them. There was like four or five of them.
Yikes!
Yeah. So the night of that night when we saw that UFO go over, I thought to myself, Because we heard this howl right afterward. I'm like thinking to myself, could this have just deposited these creatures, you know, under the cover of night or whatever? But again, it's, you know, a lot of speculation. I know it's really out there. But, you know, Lee continues to get a lot of evidence out there, a lot of activity still going on. And, you know, we're still wrapping our heads around it. So we're trying to get back out there again. But, I mean, it's beyond that. We're doing so many productions and things like that. So we're working on a haunted vampire museum right now as well.
Oh, that's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny with this subject matter because it is so easy to just sort of go down rabbit holes with it. And it's right. Hard not to, because there isn't really a solid foundation as to exactly what this is. Like, I mean, I personally don't think that this is a biological entity of some sort, just simply because evolutionary wise, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It has to be coming from somewhere, whether that be, I don't know, whether interdimensional or spiritual or something mm-hmm. like that. But I know you look back and throughout history of these things, and they're often really associated with like effigy mounds or burial mounds and things like that, which is interesting. I know Linda Godfrey, when she was writing about the first recorded sighting of the Beast of Bray Road, that was the one thing that she had noted, was that it was digging up,
right,
in a cemetery, is digging something up. So like, that's interesting to me. But what's even more interesting, and what I find strange, because a lot of people tie things like, you know, cryptids and hauntings and things like that to you know, old land and burial land and stuff. But the reality is the majority of our land is old land and burial land.
Right.
So like, that's, to me, that's a hard, you know, connection to make, because we just have it everywhere. But at the same time, they're often seen around military installations, mm-hmm. which is something that I find fascinating, because it's mm-hmm. like, is that just the sort of the same thing where you've got people out on watch all the time? And mm. these people that are out on watch are, you know, they're seeing them simply because they're out there, you know, or is there some kind of a connection or draw? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, are they out there, and why haven't they been able to get a picture or anything of these things, yeah. you know? And I'll tell you why. I mean, Lee is running into the same thing, because he's got trail cams all over the place out there, and he is not once, maybe once, has gotten a kind of a blurry image of some big black type of thing in his field. And the other pictures that he's got are, there's things really up close to the camera. So look, let's face it, there's a lot of fakery out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the other thing to talk about too. You know, it ruins the research when you've got, and I see it all the time, and people are posting fake Bigfoot pictures and you know, Dog Man and other videos where clearly it's faked, and it's just like, in UFO videos that are faked. It's like, it really ruins the research of what is really going on out there, because we try to pride ourselves in truth-based investigating, you know. And I remember being asked to be on a YouTube show, and the guy asked me if I saw it, and I said, no, we heard it, we saw the eye shine, but we didn't see the physical creature. And he's like, oh, okay, well, then I can't have you on my YouTube show. I have to have people that have actually seen it. But I'll put you on a pay-per-view type thing. And I'm like, really? You know, wow. And it's like, wow. It's like, boy, oh boy. It's like, thank God I never even got hooked up with that person, because I don't want to even be, you know, connected with anything like that. What we experienced was real. And, you know, you have a lot of people out there that are faking it, trying to make money off of it. And, you know, that's the unfortunate part of our research. You know, I know you've dealt with that. You've kind of run into that situation. But beyond all that, I love the subject. I mean, the subject is fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, you and I, we've chatted about this so much, about the idea. Yeah.
So many times. And it's like, what, you know, you're saying that you weren't invited onto a channel because you hadn't seen it. Like, that's the last channel I would watch, really.
Oh, yeah. 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 And unfortunately, I saw, I won't name any names here, yeah. but I saw somebody that had 45,000 views, or mm-hmm. some incredible number, of the picture that doesn't even represent the Dog Man or anything like that. So it was really disheartening that way to even go down that road. And I was like, wow. I said, well, I don't want to be associated with anybody like that, you know. And
it's strange how once money is involved, things kind of go sideways. You look at Frank Searle, yes, for example, in Loch Ness, and that guy essentially, to coin a phrase from a documentary I just watched, created a monster. You know, mm-hmm. I frankly don't want to be a part of anything like that. I'm looking at let's investigate what we're actually seeing. What are people actually seeing?
Right.
Let's not say I saw this hairy man-like thing. Da da da. If you did see that, that's great. But to only investigate that kind of thing, I don't know.
Or don't show a picture of a bush and say it's the Dog Man.
Right.
You know, it's like that. You get that a lot. I had a woman, I mean, and God bless her, you know, she just was so convinced that she had Bigfoot in her backyard. And I mean, when I kid you not, when she sent me one picture, she sent me like 500 pictures of the same thing. And I finally just had I'm a nice guy. I don't like to be disrespectful to anybody. And I just had to finally say, look, you know, I'm sorry, but I just don't see this. And I just really think it's not there. It's like it's azaleas. It's your, it's your arborvitaes in the backyard. It's not Bigfoot. It's not anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, that finally kind of went, by the wayside. But, so much so that I got a video from her and it clearly sounded like a lawnmower engine, like a riding lawnmower with its headlights at night. That's saying that was the Bigfoot that was looking back at her.
Wow.
I was like, okay. Yeah. So unfortunately, you get situations like that where people are so desperate to know, or just, desperate to get out there, and maybe they have had an experience, but they want to keep those experiences going, And
well, it's lit from within.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Well said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think too, in some of these cases, like I actually just recently dealt with a fellow who was messaging with me, and he was 100% convinced that there was UFOs that he was seeing UFOs, and that these UFOs were kind of like stalking him and whatever. Mm-hmm. And the reality was the guy was having some sort of psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolute 100% psychosis. And I don't know whether it was like a drug-induced psychosis or drug-induced psychosis coupled with mental illness or what it was going on. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. But it was clear to me that what was going on was some semblance of breakdown. And there was nothing I could say. I mean, it was pure confirmation bias, as a lot of delusions are, where the more you contradict what they were seeing or offer them alternative explanations, the harder they dig their heels in.
You know?
And then it's like a personal attack, and then you've got these people that are just rooted. And I mean, it's brutal. And I think, quote Linda Godfrey here, because when she was looking into the Battle Creek Dogman sightings in Michigan, mm-hmm. During around the Fort Custer Training Center and Harmonia Cemetery, she said something to the Battle Creek Inquirer that I think is worth quoting. She said, "I don't pretend to know or tell people I know what it is. We've never had somebody see one and catch it and put it in a safe place to study it that we know of. I can say it is a consistent phenomenon occurring not only over the Western Hemisphere, but there are connections with werewolves in almost every culture." Mm. And she managed to hold that... She managed to hold that paradigm I can't find the word for it, but she kind of hold that tone throughout all of her investigating. And it's like there was no confirmation bias. There was none of that with her. She just looked at this phenomenon, realized as a journalist that something was massively going on here, because it's like we said, so widespread, and looked at it from that position. But I think... Yeah, I think this field specifically, and I hate to say it, but it can cater to people who either A, want to deliberately hoax it, or B, are mentally unstable.
Right.
Whenever I've seen anything, I tend to question my own mind and my own senses
sure.
at the time. Is it, did I just see what I thought I saw?
Well, Mike, we know you're crazy as it is.
True.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I mean, and even to talk about, look, here's the thing, guys, would we even be talking about this as freely as we are 15 years ago?
No,
Like, because you've got now you've got the government coming out and saying, hey, guys, the UFOs that you've been seeing since the 40s, and our pilots have been seeing, they're real, but we just don't know what they are.
Right.
And I really, truly believe that. I really don't think they know what they are. They don't know how to deal with it. And people have said that, oh, well, maybe they do know, and they're just keeping it hush hush. But I don't know. That's just my opinion. You know, they probably have no clue what they're dealing with. But so far, it hasn't been a threat. You know, that's the other thing. It really hasn't been a threat per se. I just find it fascinating. I mean, you know, and then talking about portals and things like that. Mike, you're talking about your rational mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I had my own UFO sighting a few years back in 2016, where I was going over this bridge, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, five of these orange orbs just showed up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it looked like swirling lava, you know, and it's a lot of like, I've seen a lot of these videos that people post, like on paranormal, caught on camera and places like that. And I'm like, wow, that's the same thing that I saw. And it's amazing because this was over a river. This was actually over the Delaware River, you know, where Washington crossed the Delaware. But going over the bridge, and I'm looking at this, but in my rational mind, within this few second period of happening, there's a restaurant right down below on the bridge. And I'm thinking to myself, well, could it be Chinese lanterns? Could there have been a wedding?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they lit off some Chinese lanterns, because it was only a couple hundred feet above the bridge that I was on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going over there, and it's like all of a sudden I'm like, no, that couldn't be it, because it's February. It's cold. It's a Wednesday night. I don't think anybody's going to be getting married. And then one by one, as I'm looking at these, and I was able to snap a picture of just once, but one by one, they just started just disappearing. And it was just mind blowing. And so I was able to get one picture, and I could see why people don't get pictures of these things. So I take my phone out and immediately try to take a picture. Well, guess what? The flash is on. So that time frame was gone. So I had to redo it, take the flash off. So in that few seconds, you've got within 5 seconds, if you don't get there to get this picture, it's gone.
Right.
And so I was able to get this one shot, and you could see the red ball before you could see all the other, and you could see the other ones, they were dimming out, but I got one of the, I'll have to send you that too. It was just amazing.
I mean, humans are geared toward trying to explain what we see. Like, it's how we work. When we see something freaky, we have to put something to it. But at the same time, is what we're seeing actually what we're seeing? Is there more to it? Morgan and I talk about this all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it. And that's the part that that's what we research. What is that missing piece?
Mm-hmm.
That is the big question. You know, like, yeah, what is that missing piece that we're seeing? Is this, you know, a flaw in the fact that we can only see so much? You know, and that this is what's going on. I know in my own encounters with this stuff, the one thing that I've noticed is that, and we recently had Ron Moorhead on as well, and we were talking about the same thing in regards to Bigfoot, let alone Dogman, but is that they really shy away from cameras at all. And mm-hmm. I know for myself, and we see this in wildlife too, like coyotes, for example, are very rarely caught on trail cams because they hear the trail cam running, like you hear the motor, mm-hmm. and they can see the infrared coming. So there's a couple of different sensory issues with things like trail cams and stuff, like just on a physical level. But I know for me, when I was, going out and seeing these critters on a semi-regular basis, that anytime you had a camera in your hands or you put the camera up or whatever you were seeing would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to keep that camera down. And the only footage that I was able to catch of mine, and I saw them as I say, semi-regularly, was I ended up, was walking the trail the one night, and I had the my phone camera facing over my shoulder as I was walking forward. And I ended up catching a still photo that was, that's pretty clear of one of these guys, off to the one side of the trail. And it was, it's clear as I've seen it, but I, it's not clear enough for me to present it as evidence, but it's clear enough that you can see what it is. And I think, but it took me having this thing over my shoulder, pretending that I wasn't shooting anything. You know, like it's really hard to get the, you know, to get any semblance of photo, especially when you're dealing, I think, with something so bloody intelligent.
Well, yeah, you just said it. It's, you know, there is an intelligence there. You know, I always go back to Lee's pictures. He's got one picture where he would put roadkill deer in this bait area that we call the bait area, that he has all this activity in. So he has a picture where one picture, he's, you see the roadkill deer there, but then you see this mist comes over this deer. It's this weird mist in the daytime. And it's a crazy mist, like a black mist. All of a sudden, 30 seconds later is the next picture. The deer is gone, and so is the mist. So what that tells me right there, this has got to be some kind of a interdimensional type of thing going on here. You know, you're talking about, you know, you can't really see it. You had to take that picture over your shoulder. You know, these things are so adept maybe at blending into their environment. You know, it's like a deer. You know, when you're looking at a deer, you know, it's sometimes right there in front of you, but they blend in so much into the woods, you can't see it. And I'm wondering if that's what this dog man, and even Bigfoot, is really kind of has that kind of capability. I know now there's some research going on about light spectrum. Now, you know, during the day, you know, we could be seeing ghosts and orbs and stuff like that all the time. But it seems to be at night and through night vision and whatnot, people are getting a lot more orbs. They're seeing a lot more shadow figures and things like that. So there is some kind of research that needs to be done more into that light spectrum, you know, especially at night.
Yeah, I had a theory running for years. This was, oh God, about 10 years, probably more than 10 years ago. But, is that this, that's exactly right. I think so much of what we don't see does depend on what we are able to pick up. And maybe that's one of the reasons why things look like they disappear to us.
Right.
You know, is that the spectrum shifts, or, you know, how we're perceiving it shifts, and then it looks like it disappears, but it hasn't. And I know with what I've experienced with some of these creatures, I think there's a level of respect and connection and intention is the word I'm looking for, that I think that they're seeking as well. And we talked about this with Ron Moorhead just recently in regards to Portlock, Alaska. But I think there's this level of intention that as soon as they know, and I don't know how they know, but there's something about what we're doing that they seem to understand that if you're going out there, you know, and you've got a gun, or you've, you know, you're carrying around a pile of gear, or you're carrying around, there's something about that that they're just, they don't want to interact with. Like the best encounters that I've had no gear with me. You know, it's just been me not expecting them to show up, not expecting anything to go on, just go and just be present.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, and that presence in the moment with, you know, look, I'm not looking to exploit you. I'm not looking to get a photo of you. I'm not looking to any of that. I'm here, I'm present, and I'm willing to connect. And those are the best encounters that I've had. And they've been the most frequent.
And the most productive, right, I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and that's what happened with us. That's why I went out there with no intention of seeing one of these things. I didn't want to go out there. I had really went out there very naive when it came to this. And I think that was kind of, that helped us.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we had this trifecta of of paranormal activity. The other thing was, too, that night of that investigation in 2021, I mean, the entire town of Elkhorn lost power that night. And it was a crazy thing. So the next morning I get up and I found I had brought a stick back somehow on my boot from Lee's field. And Dominic goes, "You brought it back with you, didn't you?"
Don't know.
And it was just amazing. I mean, Not only with Dog Man, but we just we had something happen the other night, which we're working on this new video for a Haunted Vampire Museum. It's the, called the Vampa Museum Vampire Paranormal. He has over 700 vampire killing sets in there.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's a series about, you know, the lore of the vampire is not really what people think. You know, people think Dracula and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really about demonic possession and what kind of things that these individuals are either possessed by or have a history with. And a lot of these objects in the museum have some kind of haunted, you know, connection to them, a spiritual connection. So this is the first time that we've really delved into something in the demonic realm, which we've never really done before, because I don't like to go there. I've always kind of wanted it to be very family friendly show. And it still is, you know, but we're doing this. And, you know, we went in there and believe me, I wore my rosaries and, you know, just for protection wise, you know, I'm not very religious, but I have a strong faith. And, so Dominic is the same thing. This investigation not only freaked him out, but we also had another psychic medium with us, Julie Krause, and it completely freaked her out too. The amount of energy coming off of these, some of the things that are beautiful, not just the vampire stuff, but just like really incredible structures and dolls. And like, there's a Burmese doll, that's probably like 4 or 5 feet tall that has real hair. And it's probably from the 1800s. And it's just like this amazing thing. And it's in this room that Ed Krimi is the owner and the curator. He has this off to the side and there's a warning sign above the door saying, please do not reach into this room. Well, we did an investigation a couple of weeks ago I'm working on it right now. I'm finishing it up. We did part one. I'm working on part two. So basically we went into this investigation thinking, well, you know, what is going on with these objects? What's happening with these particular objects? Is there a spiritual connection? So with that, Dominic had said that he had heard some kind of sound in this doll room that I was just talking about. So we went over to the barn the night of the investigation. And why Dominic said he had heard that is because we heard the same sound in the barn. So that was something that we looked into. So we went back a couple of days later and we did some extra filming in the doll room. So Dominic has his back to this room and he's kind of recreating what he had heard. Well, while he's got his back to the room, we all hear this disembodied voice. And it was coming from this room. And, you know, Dominic was thinking, well, maybe it's one of the doll's voice boxes or something like that. That's, you know, electronics were kind of, the batteries are dying or something. But what he didn't realize is that all of these dolls are pre any of that. There's no voice boxes in there at all. So it was absolutely chilling what we heard. And I captured it on video.
That's awesome.
And that's going to be on our next video.
Oh, cool.
And you could see real time how we reacted to that. You know, the usual expletive is like, what the, you know, and it was real. I mean, it was just the real, because we were, I think I was the only calm one there. Dominic freaked out. Ed was freaking out. But Ed is also an exorcist and he's also an ordained minister.
Oh, that helps.
So I felt we were in pretty good hands, but it was just really crazy. So again, I have to go back and say, you know, my perspective's changed a lot.
Yeah. Well, I hear that because I know before any of my encounters, you know, cryptid wise and stuff, I mean, cause my primary area is parapsychology and I kind of had lumped, I think, everything into that category of parapsychology, that this is, you know, this has to do with, you know, hauntings and that side of it, I felt like I had a pretty good beat on and whatnot. And then this whole other side with, you know, Dogman and, you know, like we've talked about with Sasquatch and things like that, mm-hmm. this idea that it is more than that. It is more right. than just, you know, this creature running around, and whatever. I mean, I had to really shift my paradigms. And, you know, and I'd listen too to so many of the, you know, the Native Americans here, because with Canada, we have, you know, really a strong foundation of Native Americans. And, you know, they have had very strong, you know, beliefs that these creatures are from the spirit world, that that is the same. Like, this all is the same. And I struggled to get my head around that. But like you say, it's, you know, this lore, there's truth in, we have to listen. We have to pay attention to what we're being told from these different older communities that kind of have a bit of a bead on stuff. And it doesn't mean all of it's right. And it doesn't mean all of it's true, but we have to definitely take a listen. Because, I mean, man, there has been stuff, especially over the last year, you know, with, you know, I've had a couple more encounters with one of our dogmen here, Snoopy, that have been absolutely fascinating. Just, we had one actually a number of nights ago, very close to my place. I live near deep woods and a river valley and whatnot. And we had a really interesting situation where we had a pack of coyotes that were, I mean, they were out and yipping and doing their thing. And, you know, within a short amount of time, we saw the eye shine and the coyotes went absolutely bananas. And they were barking. They went from being excited and yipping and, you know, yowling and doing their thing to all focused into the trees and barking like crazy, like just on high alert. And yeah, and you could see about, again, like, you know, 6-7 feet up in the tree, you saw these bright, bright eyes that are unmistakable with these guys. And he never let out with a howl, because usually with our guy, we hear the coyotes start yelling, and then we hear this guy let loose with a howl in another direction. But we saw the eye shine popped up, and the coyotes just turned and were like, oh no. And they took off really, really quick. But it was really fascinating. So yeah, like you say, just changing our perspective, that there's stuff out there that we
just can't explain. Yeah. I mean, there's things you can't see, you can't explain. And yeah, it's fascinating to me. I mean, it's just, and the thing is, people come up and tell stories. You know, that's one of the other reasons why we do this with our show, is because, you know, it shows people, look, you know, people are not afraid to come up and tell their story. You know, I think that stigmata and the ridicule factor is not there anymore, because, you know, just because of, like, what I had said, you know, people are speaking so freely about it, you know? And so I like that. We did a UFO video recently where I had witnesses came on camera and didn't have any qualms about, you know, being on camera. They told their story, told the truth. And and I know you are too, we're good at discerning the BS from the truth, right? So, you know, when I'm interviewing witnesses and their voices are cracking and they're like genuinely like perplexed by what happened and what they saw, you really have to look at that. And I never discount what people are seeing. Obviously, if it's blatantly fake, yeah, you know exactly where they're coming from. But it just, the whole subject is fascinating to me. And, you know, the thing with paranormal research, it's like, will we ever have an answer? You know, it's always like this infinite, intangible thing. You know, it's like, what is there? And that's the other fascinating factor of this too, because I don't care who it is, rich, poor, whatever, a CEO of a company, everyone has had a paranormal experience in their lives, you know, that they can't explain. So, you know, being able to do these investigations has been not only fun, it's just, I mean, it's a vocation. I mean, it's turning into a business now too. You know, we're talking about money, you know, and things like that. And you know, obviously sometimes things, you have to edit things. Well, it costs a little bit to edit. So, to be able to turn this into a little bit of a business and tells good stories is what it's all about. You know, it's in getting the truth. That's the main thing.
That's the balance, I think. And I think that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road for people. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's, I mean, Mike, I mean, you and I, we deal with that constantly. It's just, you know, making sure that we deal with this world with integrity. Right. And I think that's really, really key. And I think if you start and have roots, and again, it comes back to intention, to keep bringing it back to that. But I think that really is what it is. When Steph and I first developed Entity Seeker back in 2003, that was one of the things that the two of us made a vow on, and I've kept that vow. She's since passed away, but I've kept that vow, is that the number one, what we were doing was never to come above our friendship. That was the first rule. And the second rule was we do everything we can in service of something more.
Right.
And because of that, it has kept, I think, a long vision, like both for myself and, you know, for her when she was here. And I'm sure now whether she's, she's passed over, but but that keeping that integrity is absolutely crucial.
Oh,
because
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
If you lose that, you're in trouble.
I was going to say one quick thing too, with the money aspect of it too. I didn't want to come off like it's making money off of it. What we're doing is when we do events for people, like, you know, how you do events, you know, people want to come to these events. And,
absolutely.
And so when we do a screening of an event of a video that we did for a restaurant, we have a great thing where there's a 3-course meal that the restaurant puts together for one price, and they come out and we do a screening, we do some Q&A, take people on a tour of some of the hotspots. So it's a great revenue source for a lot of these venues. And I should also talk to you about my very first paranormal convention coming up on March 9th.
Excellent.
Oh,
I don't
cool.
know if I
yeah,
told you
perfect.
Or not.
Yeah.
March 9th, and you're going to eventually, one of these days, we're going to have you down here for this as well. This is our very first one that we're doing. March 9th, it's from 12 to 7. It's at Bucks County Community College. For some of your listeners who are in here in Pennsylvania, it's in Newtown, Pennsylvania. It's from 12 to 7. We have featured speaker that day is Nick Pope from the Ancient Aliens.
Yeah.
I could not believe he was able to do this. So Nick's a really great guy, and his schedule was open and we were able to do this. And being on a no budget type of convention, it was amazing that he was able to do this for us. So we've got Nick, we've got Bill Burns from UFO Hunters. We've got myself and Dominic are talking. We've got Tom Carey talking about Roswell, and Eric Spinner talking about Bigfoot in the Pine Barrens, and another buddy of mine, Jim Krug, who's talking about aliens on the moon. So being the first one we've got, I wanted to kind of keep it locally for speakers, and already we've got food vendors, we've got food trucks, we've got vendors there that are going to have all kinds of paranormal wares, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So tickets are flying off the shelf, but they could, and I have a dedicated website now, guys, for my investigative adventures here. It's ericmintelinvestigates.org.
Cool.
And people could check out and get tickets on there if they feel they want to be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I wanted to keep it, you know, just from 12 to 7, I wanted to kind of keep it on the minimal side time wise, because, you know, people's attention span, I don't want to take at the whole entire day. I've been at conventions where they've been all day long and people are like, finally, when the featured speaker gets on at like 9 o'clock, no one's there anymore. So, you know,
well, that's really exciting. And I absolutely look forward to the invite to come down, because I would love to.
Mm-hmm.
We will make that official right now. Mike and
definitely.
I will be there if
if we're invited.
I rattle off a bunch of guys that are talking, but we definitely are talking. We will have women speakers next year for sure. So that's going to be good. So somebody had said, you've got all guy speakers. I said, well, that was just by happenstance. It wasn't on purpose.
It's a male dominated field. I mean, that's kind of the way it is, right?
But there's a lot of women like yourself, and just that people have great, great talks and experiences that, you know, one of the things we're getting into now too, is the alien abduction phenomena. You know, yeah. I've been talking with Peter Robbins, who I know you're familiar with, and
yep.
a phenomenal guy. And we're also talking about, you know, Bud Hopkins' work into
right.
these abductees. And just, it's fascinating to me too. It's like, again, you've got thousands and thousands of people having these experiences. They cannot all be crazy.
I was just reading about the kids in Zimbabwe in 1994, for example.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Yep.
And Johnny Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist who's, you know, passed away, but
yeah.
How he looked into that, and, you know, it's oh, such yeah. an interesting case. There's so many interesting cases like that.
I think there's a handful of cases that you could really say, you know, something really happened to these people. You know, mm-hmm. Travis Walton, Betty and Barney Hill,
right?
Calvin Parker, Charlie Hicks, you know, and then some of these other people too, like Whitley Strieber.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the Allagash abductions up in Maine. You know, these are guys and people that have had and women that have had these experiences that they're so vivid, you know, and they don't know each other. Even with Betty and Barney Hill, which was the very first one to really come forward, nobody knew what a gray looked like. Nobody had any kind of idea about that. And she's describing this thing. She even made like a plaster bust of the thing, of what it looked like. I think she carried it around with her at all of her speaking engagements. But I had the pleasure of talking with her niece, Kathleen Martin. And I'm actually speaking this year at the Exeter UFO Festival in New Hampshire in September. Cool. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, we've got to wrap up, but it sucks because we could be here for hours. So, but
I know, right?
It's crazy. But one last question to kind of leave the audience with something is what would you say to the hoaxers out there that are doing this?
Just stop.
Yeah.
I would just say stop. Please stop.
Yeah.
Please nicely, I will say please stop, because it's not doing any of the research any good. Any of the AI stuff, just stop.
Yeah.
Because get out into the field, get away from your computer, get out in the field, do the research like we're doing, and you don't need AI because it's there. The stuff is there. The creatures there. These are unexplainable things that are there. So no amount of AI is ever going to cover that. It's there. It's real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It takes the magic out of your life so quickly, I think, you know.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
The hoaxing. It's.
Oh yeah.
There is no magic in it. There really isn't.
We all need to have that sense of wonder, right? You know, I like to wake up with a sense of wonder every day about the world. You know, I mean, the world. Let's face it; it's not very good right now. But it's like I try to keep positive and try to stay positive, and have hope for humanity. You know, and doing these investigations. And doing these and telling these stories, being creative, being a creative individual, not only that way, but with jazz and music, you know, I like to try to enhance people's lives in a positive way, not any kind of like negativity or, you know, any kind of fakery or anything like that. So, yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, we could talk for hours on it. So we'll have to do part two.
I agree. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Eric. This has been awesome.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much, Morgan and Mike. Thank you so much for having me on it. And you guys be safe out there, okay?
We are back after our conversation with Eric Mintel. And of course, once again, such an engaging guy. I really, really like Eric. Like, having a conversation with him is so fun. He's so charismatic and just, he makes me laugh, which is a good thing.
It is a good thing. Well, and you have to have a sense of humor, I think, in this field too, right? Or else you'll start to go nuts, especially with some of the people that you kind of end up dealing with. And to be able to shake some of that negativity off, I think, is really important. And he does that exceptionally well. What I loved about this conversation and what I really take away from it is that, you know, each of these subject matters, even though they seem to be very separate, really aren't. And yet again, we've got, you know, these strange tales of Dogman. We've got these, you know, it just intermingled with things like UFOs and whatnot. And it really does, again, all come back to that whole idea that our perception is everything, and it's guiding the reality that we're seeing. So it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I would love to be involved in a real sort of structured event like Eric does. Like they go out and he and his folks go out and they do, they look around and you know, sometimes they don't find anything. And to me, that is like, that's the real deal right there. It's not the ones who are going, oh, did you hear that? Oh, look, a piece of dust flew by the camera. It must be an orb. You know, like,
oh God.
I really wish that was more the norm. I know it doesn't make for super exciting video or audio or those kind of things, but if you're engaging enough, that can be really interesting. That can be a fascinating thing to watch, especially if you intersperse it with why you're out there and why you're looking around for this stuff and stories that other people have told. Maybe you don't find anything, but sometimes leaving questions is more important than getting answers, if that makes any sense.
I think it makes complete sense. And I mean, I did that for so many years. I mean, I've been a field researcher. I was a field researcher first before I ever was doing podcasts and TV shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's really how it was. You know, when Stephanie and I started Entity Seeker, it was all field research. And I mean, we went everywhere. And more often than not, it was quiet. I mean, we would have hours and hours and hours of quiet. We always kind of dreaded the looking back on the footage, because sometimes we'd have, you know, 5 or 6 CCTV cameras running, and you had to go through everything.
Sure.
You know, and it was hours and hours of painful. It was painful. But it was worth it when there was that one thing that would come up that you went, wait a minute, that shouldn't be there. And you'd debunk whatever, you know, possibilities that were in front of you, and you'd realize that it was something significant. But you know, we loved it. We loved going out and getting our hands dirty in the field and learning. And that's really, really is where you learn not only how to see the hoaxes and to debunk the hoaxes, but to really test yourself and test your own perceptions and be willing to challenge your own paradigms, because our experiences are malleable in our mm-hmm. minds, right? Yeah. So it's tricky.
It definitely is tricky.
But I think Eric's done a really, really great job here, and it'll be great to have him back. So that was, yeah. I don't know, that was my takeaway from this. It was great.
Yeah, I think we need to have Eric back, and we're heading in our direction with this show that I think is going to become crystallized here pretty soon, especially with some interviews that we've got upcoming. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a big step, big motion forward. And I think everybody listening is going to get so much out of where we're taking this show that they haven't before. And I'm excited to bring everybody on this journey with us, because I think this is going to be the next level of this discussion, which is needed.
Yeah. So thank you, dear listeners, for joining us on this expedition into the unknown.
And remember, the line between the natural and the supernatural is often a thin one. Until next time, stay curious, friends.